from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I've got a preview of this year's Indiana State Fair.
I'll chat with Scotty Morris, the lead singer of Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
And I'll find out about a new interactive history game called Looking Up College Avenue, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Will We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. It's the year of the farmer at the Indiana State Fair, and if you are a regular listener to WFYI Radio, you know it's also a year of Garrison Keillor. Sharon Gamble invited the State Fair's Leslie Gordon in to tell us more about our great State Fair.
I think I knew at one time, but how old is the State Fair? What year is this?
This will be the 159th State Fair.
No way.
Yes.
So, a State Fair... Correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't grow up here, but I've lived in Indiana most of my life. My impression is fairs started, are still kind of encompassing the same purpose they started out for, which was to showcase state's agricultural production. Is that right?
Yes. So our first state fair was in 1852. And yes, it was so that farmers could come together before there were radio and internet and Twitter.
Sure.
They needed to kind of compare what was working, what wasn't working, and really how to get the most out of their land. And so that's what the state fair became, a really great connector. And so, yes, we do want to continue with that philosophy, but also show a little bit more how it's evolved, the technology advancements, and then continuing that education. We have a lot of generations removed from the farm. So
Sure. We
have a lot of younger children that don't quite know where food comes from. Their first thought is the grocery store. And so we really want to enhance on that and make sure that they do know everything that goes into that work and what the farmers do.
Yeah. Has our state fair always been in Indianapolis, or did it move here?
It has moved around, but
yeah.
For the longest time it has been at the fairgrounds. We've just been able to expand that.
Yeah. And the attendance, just, it feels like you set an attendance record almost every year. What is a typical attendance?
We get nearly a million visitors every year so far. I mean, we stay right in that 900 range, so it can be in the low 900,000s, or I believe we have exceeded a million in the past 10 years before.
That's amazing.
So yes, we see a huge array of visitors from all over the state and outside of the state.
And I realize that you're relatively new to the fair, but certainly I'm sure everybody around Andrew has talked about the difference between the old fair, which was it 10 or 12 or 14 days, and now is it 17 or 18 days now?
It is 17 days. So, yes, we've extended that so that we get multiple weekends, as well as give our younger crowd a chance to participate. You know, schools keep going back earlier and earlier, so we definitely are trying to make sure that they have enough time to show their animals and really take in the fair.
Sure. Now, is there... I know that that the focus is on our state, but nevertheless, there are always vendors and participants who are kind of making the rounds of state fairs. Is that a big factor in deciding on the dates of the fair, or do we just set it based on our state's needs?
As of right now, that's kind of how it started, of what, you know, what would be best for our state and our students, and really just putting on the best fair that we can year after year.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about what's new at this year's fair. This is the year of the farmer.
It is.
Every year is the year of the farmer for the state fair, right? But
right, that
special,
is a
special focus this year.
That's a common... thing that we get tied to. Everyone's like, it's always the year of the farmer. And so that made it more clear that we needed to really emphasize that and really show how these farmers sacrifice each day and what their families do. So we'll be looking at 17 farmers, a different one each day, a different commodity group, highlighting their family, where they're located, and really what they do, what makes and why they do it is really what's been fascinating to hear and see.
So different commodity group, meaning like a corn farmer one time, a pork farmer another time, that kind of thing.
And then also, I mean, mint. We have an aquaculture farm in Indiana as well, and they farm shrimp. So just really trying to shed some light on some of those areas that everyone wouldn't guess happened in Indiana.
What are some of the other surprising things you've discovered as you've been finding out more about the breadth of farming that we're doing?
Yeah, really just the hard work. I think we brush over a lot of that today with as quick as technology and information comes, just what all it takes, and learning that a lot of these farms are 3, 4, and 5 generations in, just how much goes into production. A lot of our farmers actually provide food for the entire nation. I mean, they're hitting, some of their products hit your Walmarts and your Targets and your Lowe's. So they are shipping to Florida and other areas. So it's just really cool to see that Indiana's agriculture spans the nation.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to showcasing what farmers do and some of the technologies and the products and the equipment, the fair really has a much broader reach, though, right?
We do. And one of the ways we do that is with all the different entertainment and the arts options. So we really hold close to education and exhibiting those 4-H projects and hard work that those students do. But we also take a look at an open class so that you don't have to necessarily be in 4-H to compete and show off your art, your photography, paintings. We've expanded our youth arts division that's given a little more to ceramics and graphic design. There's even some model airplanes, Legos. So really just trying to keep things relevant.
Sure.
And then our entertainment is a great way that we do that, from our free stage, which you can see anyone from Indigo Girls to Craig Morgan to Casey and the Sunshine Band. And then you come to our Indiana Farmers Coliseum that's going to have Megan Trainor, Garrison Keillor, Fluffy Iglesias, and Jake Owen. So we really are trying to bring in everybody. And we just added the 93.9 Summer Beat concert that's going to have an old school R&B feel. So just a lot of fun and diverse acts and entertainment that we bring so that we continue to attract a lot of different people.
My guess is people who are coming for a concert make a day of it or a half day of it, right?
We do encourage that. And this year's a little different. So you are having to buy your ticket separately. So you'll buy your online state fair ticket and then you can buy your online concert ticket and bring those together. But we do encourage you, you know, come out, come to the grandstand for a free entertainment act, check out the Knights of Valor, then go to your concert or, you know, go to your concert, get your dinner, really just make it a family-friendly night of entertainment.
A lot of people are taking advantage of alternate transportation, shall we call it, the fare train, right?
Yes.
And where does the fare train originate? And where, obviously it ends up at the fairgrounds, but where can people hop on the fare train?
The main one is the stop that's in Fishers. Mm-hmm. So they started it and they go back and forth, and I believe they run pretty regularly scheduled. And yeah, it's been a great experience. I've heard a lot of people say, if you haven't done it, park your car and really experience that. And another note or nod to transportation, this will be the first year of the bicentennial train on the fairgrounds.
Oh.
So that'll be a permanent exhibit there at the fairgrounds for the next 5 years, but this will be that first year. So you can kind of see the evolution of transportation in our state, including part of that fair train and how you get to the fairgrounds.
Wow. And now, is that the same bicentennial train that the Indiana Historical Society has worked on?
It is. That's a great partnership with them, as well as the Indiana Rail Association.
And then if you'd like to power yourself there, you have options for people who want to bicycle to the fair, right?
We do. We really understand the transition that Indianapolis is seeing, and we want everyone to feel welcomed and feel like they have a place. So, yeah, we do pedal and park, and there's actually a dollar discount on your ticket at the gate if you use pedal and park. Just monitor the hours, but we also are close to the Monon, so if you would like to walk, we really encourage alternative ways to get to the fair.
Now, regular listeners to this show know that Travis and I have a soft spot for fried foods, so I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about fair food, not necessarily just the unhealthy stuff, but tell us about what some of the signature foods are.
Oh, yeah, you're not alone. That's one of the main reasons. Heck, I did the fair food for forever. That was the only reason I came.
You walk the whole day at the fair, so you're burning off the calories, right?
Sure. This year, with it being Year of the Farmer, we were really focusing on that farm-to-table or farm-to-fair theme and
sure.
really wanting Indiana-grown products kind of with a fair spin. So the winner, the Indiana Pork Association, won with their smoked pig patty.
Mm.
So it's got locally sourced barbecue and pickles as well as that pork, and it's smoked this year, which is a little different from what they have been doing in the mm-hmm. past. But some other contestants included deep fried corn on the cob, and they're a fan favorite. Bartow's Catering, they supply that. We had a fried apple bite. We had a s'mores milkshake with a Munster grilled cheese garnish that they'll also be selling. So, yeah, there's going to be plenty of great bites to eat. And really to balance that, we do have a farm fresh area where farm fresh produce area mm-hmm. where you can go and kind of get the things that if you do have a more precise diet or you're trying to eat healthy, we
sure.
want to be able to cater to those visitors as well. So if you go to our Purdue Extension Ag Court building, they'll be able to find some of those supplies, your salads and everything, again, very fresh.
And actually, speaking of Purdue, the Purdue Master Gardeners have a demonstration garden that includes vegetables. So people who are trying, you know, more and more people are putting in raised beds and doing their own, growing their own produce at home. And there's some good tips out there every year.
There definitely are. And one of our farmers that'll be featured is an urban farmer and is really shedding some light on how communities are pulling together to produce their own food and ways that you can learn more about
right.
that.
Farm isn't necessarily out there in the hinterlands of the state. It could be in your own yard.
It definitely can
yeah.
be.
One of my favorite places at the fair, you're going to have to help me come up with the name of this, but there's a marketplace where products that are made by Indiana farmers and artisans can be purchased, you know, maple syrup and preserves and so forth. What's that called? Remind me.
You bring a great point that this year it'll be in the Purdue Extension Ag Court building, and that is a little different. It's been in our what people knew as the DuPont Pavilion.
Right.
But we've moved that, so it's just right across the way to Purdue Extension Ag Court. And then the Visit Indiana Harvest Pavilion is really going to house our education exhibits. So you'll see the Amazing Maze as well as the Lego presentation. Dow AgroSciences will be in there. So, yeah, if you want your education piece, you're going to the Indiana Harvest Pavilion. And if you want your local market where you can see all of our local vendors and products grown in Indiana, you're going to be in the Purdue Extension Ag Court building.
You mentioned before we turned the microphones on that you grew up in Indiana. You've gone to the fair for years. This is your first year, though, working there. What are you most looking forward to now that you're an insider?
To tell you the truth, I'm looking forward to the livestock. I have really not spent a lot of time. I went to see some piglets and,
aww.
You know, you walk through the horses. But to actually understand some of the competitions, what goes into it, and really how we promote that education is going to be the coolest part for me. And seeing those families get excited for winning and seeing their hard work pay off.
The Indiana State Fair's Leslie Gordon with Sharon Gamble. The Indiana State Fair opens August 7th and runs through August 23rd. You can catch Garrison Keillor's show on August 12th. Find out all about other performances, featured food, the photography contest, and much, much more at in.gov/statefair. Again, that's in.gov. vermont.gov/statefair.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Get your dancing shoes on. The swing band Big Bad Voodoo Daddy has been bringing their high-energy show to Indianapolis for many years, and it's coming back to Symphony on the Prairie this August. Travis DiNicola spoke by phone with Scotty Morris, the band's lead singer, about the show.
Scotty, it's awesome to talk with you. I am a huge fan of Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and so glad you guys are coming back to Indianapolis for the Symphony on the Prairie out at Conner Prairie this summer.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet, you bet. You guys have been out at Conner Prairie a number of times over the years. In fact, 2 years ago, I got to guest MC for you, and it was fantastic watching your show from the wings backstage.
Yeah, it's incredible. We've been, you know, there's some kind of connection that we made back, I'm going to say 98 is when I first really witnessed it. And you guys used to have this thing called Circle Fest, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I remember seeing you guys there on the Circle, yeah.
And I remember doing that back then, and it was the very first time I ever had ever played in Indy, and I was blown away not only how the crowd treated us, but how they treated every band, like all the music that was there. And it was always stuck with me what a music city that it is. And then just over the years, we've just built such a great relationship. Love playing Conner Prairie.
Yeah, it's really fun. You know, I mean, you've got a lot of fans that return and have seen you a number of times. I know you've got a lot of fans who are dancers who love coming out and doing the swing dance. They set up the dance floor sort of near the bandstand, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And my favorite part of that is that maybe the swing dancers come in and they maybe get the first song or two. But mm-hmm. my favorite part is seeing like three and four generations of families dancing together all night long. It's just,
oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's just so much fun. Everyone's having such a great time.
Well, I just remember the last time. I mean, you're right. Like, so the swing dancers, and they had some great outfits on, and they came up and sort of primed the pump. And then next thing you know, you saw kids and grandparents, and everyone by the end of the evening was just up and dancing.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. This is one of the best places I can think of that you can actually go do that.
Very cool. Hey, so this summer, I know you guys are on tour, going to a bunch of different places around the country. You pretty much tour every summer. Is that your schedule these days now? Or
you know, it's funny because Big Bad Voodoo Daddy is a pretty rare bird. We never had a hit song on the radio. We had songs on the radio. We had songs back in the day on MTV. Mm-hmm. We've been placed in films and movies and stuff. But, you know, it's just we've never stopped. It's just we're one of those bands that people just want to see it live. So we go and we pretty much tour all year long. I mean, we pretty much pick where we want to play, and this is all we do. We play music and we just kind of root it to where we'll go out for 3 weeks in the summertime and we'll take a month off. We'll go out for three more weeks towards the end of summer and we'll take a month off. You know, it's like one of those things. It's really, we just play constantly. We're out and then we tour very smartly. So we mm-hmm. just, you know, and then 22 years, same guys in the band.
That's
crew,
amazing, yeah.
And even our crew guys. I mean, our front of house, the guy that does the sound and he does the road managing, he's been with us for 18 years.
That's so cool. You know, the one thing that really struck me when I've seen you guys play more than maybe a dozen times now live, but when I got to MC with you guys a couple of years ago out of Conner Prairie, watching you guys both from the wings and then even, you know, seeing you sort of between breaks and stuff, you could just tell how much fun all the guys in the band are having. And that's why you're doing it, is because, I mean, you guys really enjoy playing the music and playing with each other. And that really comes across.
Yeah, thank you. And that is true. And it's amazing because, I mean, I just don't know any other situation that I can think of where there's a band or any kind of job that you spend this much time with. There's 11, 12 guys that travel with us because we've got crew, and I don't know, there's just something amazing about the whole situation, and I don't know, it's really hard to explain, but it's really a lot of fun, and we feel really lucky.
That's awesome. Hey, now let me ask you about new stuff, because you guys, I mean, you play a lot of covers of great swing standards, and you do a lot of your own original pieces, which I love. You guys got anything new in the works right now, or how's that going?
Yeah, we have a couple things actually. I tend to see that I work in threes, mm-hmm. and I usually have enough energy to, because we tour so much, I usually have enough energy to like pile out three records in a row, and then I'll take a little bit of a break, okay. Recharge my batteries, and then charge up again and do the same thing. And we just did that. We did that with How Big Can You Get, mm-hmm. Rattle Them Bones, and the Christmas record, the latest Christmas record. And those just all came bam, 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 one after another. So I took this last year off of writing and whatnot, and we are now in the process of putting together two new records for sure. One will be out in April of next year, and then the other one will be out in April, probably in 2 years after that, because we're putting one record out for our 25th anniversary.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, when you say you're doing two at once, that's kind of unusual for a band to be working on two different records at once.
I'm writing two at once. One is going to be like our Cab Calloway record. We're going to do a record entitled Louie, 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 and it's the music of Louis Armstrong, mm-hmm. Louis Jordan, and Louis Prima.
Cool.
So that'll be a fun dance record, be a fun record to go out in summertime and do some dancing and have some fun, play some performing arts centers. And then on our 25th anniversary, we'll release the full, you know, probably a 15-song original record where it's just flat out everything that people enjoy about Big Bad Voodoo Daddy's music.
That's awesome. 25 years, I mean, that definitely is to be congratulated upon. I mean, you know, a big break for you guys, of course, came with the Swingers movie. And
yeah,
that was amazing for you.
Yeah, that launched everything. I mean, that launched the scene, because there was this little bubbling scene that had been brewing around, and we had made it all the way across New York and back, and we had played probably anywhere from 350 seat clubs to maybe 500 seat clubs. Mm-hmm. And then when Swingers came out, yeah, everything changed. Everything was 1,000 seat plus.
Very cool. Do you still, I mean, see that sort of, there was a crazy excitement sort of about bringing back swing, and about the time Swingers came out, and all of a sudden, you know, hipsters were dressing in, you know, zoot suits and big funky clothes and, you know, taking the swing dancing classes. Do you guys still see a lot of that as you're traveling?
Yeah, there's still a subculture of that, but it just changes, you know? I mean, just with every scene, like every kind of fad that kind of comes and goes, you see them kind of come and go and whatnot, and sometimes it just depends on what spearheads the scene to erupt. Mm-hmm. Because Swingers, I mean, when Swingers came out, Swingers is arguably one of those films that just, I mean, that film's going to be around for a long, long time, because that's a really great film. I mean, that
still holds up.
Great,
yeah,
it just really does. So it sprung a great scene. Now, I saw a few years ago the swing thing started to come again with a younger crowd, but it came from The Great Gatsby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.
I thought The Great Gatsby was visually a nice film, but to me it didn't have the same kind of root credibility that Swingers did.
Yeah.
So I found that the next revival kind of thing that was happening with the swing sort of light up again. It was a little more paper thin. It wasn't quite as substantial as the one that happened in the 90s. So. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think there has to be something that sort of propels these scenes with some kind of credibility that helps them maintain, possibly.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I agree with you about the movie of The Great Gatsby. And it didn't quite have that same authenticity or connection that Swingers did. Let me ask you another question. I mean, you mentioned earlier about an album you're working on with Louis Prima and Louis Armstrong and Louis Jordan. I mean, you're obviously, and all the guys in the band, are fans of this music. That's why you play it. Looking back, yeah. I mean, if there was like one show you could have seen or one performer you could have seen, you know, originally from that time, who would it be for you?
It would have been Duke Ellington in the 20s.
Yeah? Tell me why.
Yeah. What's that?
Tell me why.
Well, Duke Ellington, for me, his Cotton Club era, mm-hmm. he was, to me, I this is just my opinion, but I believe that he was as prolific as Mozart was during his time. And it was, I mean, the music that he that Duke was doing in the 20s, in the late 20s, I mean, nobody really ever even caught up. I mean, nobody caught up. Fletcher Henderson kind of picked up, and there was lots of great arrangers that were picking up and mm-hmm. whatnot, but nobody was writing the bulk that Duke was. And he just evolved beyond anybody else. Like, he was light years ahead of everybody else. It's just amazing to me when I go through his catalog of music and think, like, because I'm a huge historian. I love the history of music. I love the history of jazz music. And it just dumbfounds me every time I look at Duke's career and I look at what he had done so early on. And it really gets me. Basie's another one. I mean,
sure.
Sonny Payne is playing drums with Basie. I would have really loved to have seen that.
It's got to be really cool to know that you and the band are introducing a lot of that music to a whole new audience. I mean, not just through what you're playing, but then people go back and find those old records.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great you know, message. It's a great flag to wave, because I mean, I love the music so much, and I feel so strongly about it because it's such a great American art form that mm-hmm. you know, it's so indigenous to us, and then I feel really proud to have, you know, just as long as it turns on a few people, I'm good with that.
So let me ask you this. I got into swing and jazz really from my grandfather. He, during World War II, was responsible for booking bands for his army base and actually got to hang out with the Dorsey brothers. And, you know, when I was a kid, he would, you know, play a lot of this stuff for me, and I grew to love it. How did you get into, you know, to loving this music the way that you do?
You know, my household wasn't a musical household. And I think, to be totally honest with you, I think it kind of creeped in my subculture through the, or my subconscious through cartoons.
Awesome, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, because, I mean, I've been trying to, like, I tried to narrow things down, and I just really couldn't narrow things down. And the ones that I really, the cartoons that I used to watch all the time were the ones like Betty Boop, and Betty Boop had Cab Calloway. That's how I discovered Cab Calloway.
Sure.
And, you know, and it's funny because Tom and Jerry was just such this wild, great music, and Scott Bradley did the music for that, and just really amazing stuff. And then my mom and dad had just one record, and it was just whatever the pop record of the time was, but it was one of those Louis Armstrong records that they had gotten at some, mm-hmm. you know, maybe some gift-giving party or something. And I found that record, and it was Hello Dolly record, and that was, you know, that was... Once I heard Louie, and I was kind of like, ah, this guy is the life of the party, man. This is what I want to do. This is the thing I hear. And I just was hearing those songs in my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
So I didn't know, you know, I didn't really have a real formal, everything I kind of did, I just sort of figured it out and stumbled upon on my own.
Well, we're certainly glad you did. Scotty, I really appreciate your time today. And again, I can't wait to see you guys out at Conner Prairie this summer. Like I said, awesome that Big Bad Voodoo Daddy is going to be celebrating 25 years coming up in just a little bit. Great that you guys are on tour again, and thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for talking with me.
Travis DiNicola with Scotty Morris, lead singer of Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. The band will be playing at Symphony on the Prairie on August 14th and 15th, and you can get more information and tickets at the Symphony's website, indianapolissymphony.org, or visit BBVD, that's short for Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, again, BBVD.com for info about the band. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon?
The summer is quickly speeding away.
Oh, no.
I know.
Last weekend of July already?
Soon. Oh, my goodness. Well, there's still plenty of cool stuff to do, and we'll tell you about it on our calendar week haul.
What do we do
for the final week of July?
Yeah, well, that means August is on the way, and August means Indie Fringe, and we'll be talking about Indie Fringe pretty soon.
Indeed.
But their big event every year that kicks off sort of all the Fringe stuff is the Longest Dinner, and it's coming up on Tuesday, August 4th. And if you're lucky, you can still get tickets. It is very, very fun. They are... I love the name of this wine. It's the Ladies Who who shoot their lunch wine. It's an Australian winery. Such a great name. As opposed to ladies who lunch, ladies who shoot their lunch. Okay. And that's going to be featured there, as well as some great food. You can check out the Indie Fringe website for more information and to get your tickets now. And do it now, because it always sells out.
Love it. Hey, speaking of things that are a little twisty, you know, we were just talking about the Fringe. The Friday late night show at Comedy Sports is always a little twisty. And right now, it's a little bit different than the regular Comedy Sports game. There's no referee, no rules, no fouls. It's called Ugly, UGLI, Underground Live Improv. It brings untried and brand new improv games to our seasoned players. They experiment and see where they go and push the limits of improv. It could be ugly, could become a masterpiece. The outcome is in the practice and the playing. And it might get a little sassy, a little saucy. So it is for audiences 17 and over. And remember, this is the Friday Late Night Show, 10 o'clock. It's going through August 7th, so you better go catch it very soon at Comedy Sports.
Catch it quick.
Catch it quick.
Catch it quick. Hey, I've been meaning to give some congratulations to the 2015 Eugenia Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award winners that have just been recently announced by the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. So congratulations. There's a lot of poets on the list this year. To National Author winner Marianne Borick, who's a poet and also teaches at Purdue, and Regional Author winner Adrienne Machiketa, and the three Emerging Author finalists Laura Bates, Skilia Brown, and Clifford Garstang, and we'll be hearing more about them soon as we get closer to the big award ceremony, which takes place on October 10th at the library.
Hey, I have a call out to those of you fashion designers who are procrastinators.
Okay.
Okay. Now that I have your attention, don't forget Project IMA Cutting Loose, which is the fourth in a series of runway shows organized by the museum, is seeking, it's actually doing its call for entries, but those are due by August 7th at 9 p.m. Not 5 p.m., but 9 p.m., because they recognize that some people get more creative as the day goes on. You can find out more at imamuseum.org, and it's in the Cutting Edge fashion exhibition. This will be where it all ends up. They're looking for wearable pieces of art that can be modeled on a runway and that exhibit unique, innovative, inspirational, and creative artistry. So you don't really need to have a pedigree beyond your desire to design and willingness to make something that can be modeled on a runway and that's pretty groovy and unusual. So check that out. Project IMA.
Yeah, well, while we're on the IMA, then I will mention that there's a couple other really cool things coming up, including the Family Day Field Day on August 1st. It's free and open to the public, and they're having lots of events, including toss the sculpture and pass the ancient scroll and hang a painting blindfolded. I'd love to see those competitions. That's going to be just a hoot.
Just don't toss the sculpture blindfolded.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works out, but that's from 10 to 3 on August 1st for the field day. And then they're doing some really fun things out of the gardens as well, including the annual hummingbird banding.
I love that.
Catch and release. Yeah, you can't keep the hummingbird and take it home. That's going to take place on August 22nd. And they're going to have workshops on how to learn to attract hummingbirds to your garden. And then there'll then be some nationally certified bird banders there to catch, band, and release these little feisty creatures. That should be a lot.
I've been
of
to that before.
It is
fascinating.
I can't wait to see that.
I know it's adorable too. You just want to go. Oh. Hey, so one of these days, the cataclysm is gonna happen. The final earthquake's gonna happen. The grid's gonna fail. Society's gonna crumble. We're gonna be
hear about it here on
faced with
the Art
task
of the Matter
of rebuilding. So how will we go forward? Well, there is a new comedy on stage at the Phoenix Theater. It's called Mr. Burns, a Post-Electric Play, that shows the survivors of this cataclysm reminiscing about past episodes of The Simpsons, which ultimately leads to the development of the foundation of the new civilization. Dark comedy, yep, you got it, on stage at the Phoenix Theater through August 9th. And I have one more dark thing coming up at the Phoenix Theater. I don't know why someone did this, but someone has put together a musical version of Silence of the Lambs, and you'll be able to see it on stage at the Phoenix. I don't make this stuff up, folks. PhoenixTheater.org for more information about both of those.
Wow, that's...
dark.
I'm, I don't even know where to go. Okay, so down at the Farm Bureau Insurance Lawn at the White River State Park, some great concerts coming up very soon, including on August 2nd, Old Crow Medicine Show, and then on August 5th, the Beach Boys with the Temptations, a little surf and soul. Some really fun outdoor concerts at White River State Park coming up this in just the next week.
Go see Love and Mercy and then go see the Beach Boys. Love it.
There you go.
Hey, don't forget, You Are There, that Ayers look continues on view at the Indiana Historical Society's Indiana History Center, but just through August 6th. So if you're feeling nostalgic about chicken velvet soup and princess sundaes and the Ayers Tea Room, go check out You Are There, that Ayers look at the Indiana History Center.
And if you're looking for a road trip this weekend, then maybe you want to head down to Brown County for the Pick and Perfection at the 4th Annual Indiana State Finger Style Guitar Festival that's taking place from the 31st through August 2nd in Brown County with some of the country's finest fingerstyle guitar pickers who are going to be doing 3 days of picking perfection. So much fun to say. competitions and concerts, fun Friday tent party, Sunday guitar workshops, all types of cool stuff. So whether you play or just like to listen, you'll definitely want to check this out. Most of it takes place at the Brown County Playhouse down there in Nashville as well. You can get tickets for just 1 day, or you can do a whole weekend pass or an all-day pass or all that stuff. Get more information at browncountyplayhouse.org or at indianastringfest.com.
I have it on good authority they're selling pickled peppers down there.
They should. Last thing, Sharon, what do you got there?
Indiana Arts Commission announced 2 grant programs associated with celebration of the bicentennial and the arts. You can find out lots more at in.gov/arts, in.gov/arts, or just Google Indiana Bicentennial Arts Grants.
Very cool. And, of course, you can always, always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or just listen to Sharon and I next week on that calendar that we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Created by John Sherman and Meoa Tamori, Looking Up College Avenue is a chance to pursue a treasure hunt through history by yourself or with a group of any kind. Sharon Gamble invited writer and photographer John Sherman to our studios to learn more.
So you are a writer, you're a poet, you're a photographer, and I'm not sure what job title we're adding with this project. What would you call yourself in this project?
Maybe history maven. How about that?
Okay, yeah, that, yeah, works. Yeah. That works. How did the idea for Looking Up College Avenue come to you? And that's a you plural, because I know you have co-conspirators.
Exactly. Yeah, my co-creator is Maiwa Tamori. But I had thought of this idea some years ago, and I can't remember if it was in Indianapolis or it was in my hometown of Portland up in Jay County, but I was looking around one day, literally looking around and looking up at some old business buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And at the tops were these wonderful architectural features, you know, the brick and the designs and maybe a name of the building itself. And
maybe some terracotta.
Some terracotta, yeah, some things like that, you know, and some kind of figure or floral image or something along those lines. But at the street level, it was, if it wasn't boarded up, it was a garish paint over that brick, and it was vinyl siding and just the most awful looking things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you only drove by or walked by and didn't look up, that you didn't see what had been there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got the idea, well, it would be good for people to appreciate, you know, what was there and look up. So that's the purpose of this, is to get people to look up to see, you know, what used to be there, what is still there, sometimes under something else, or what in some cases has been beautifully restored.
And in a lot of cases, too, we are such a car culture, especially here in Indianapolis, that what we see is at
whatever is at eye level out of our car window.
Yeah.
So there are so many historic places in town you could have chosen. How did College Avenue rise to the top?
Well, I don't live too far from there. I suppose it didn't hurt. But it has an overabundance, really, of historic structures and so both current ones and, sadly, missing ones.
Yeah.
So, and it's a long street. It goes down to, it stops at Virginia Avenue downtown and actually jogs a bit, and then Noble Street continues further south. And that was the original name of the southern part of what's now College Avenue. So in looking around at college, it was like, well, this has just so many buildings that are fascinating. And a lot of those buildings are in great need of being restored.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the back of our minds, we're thinking, well, people will see these and they'll decide, hey, we need to save this building.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have what we called, not in the booklet, but we call a real teaching moment, is a building that, a beautiful Art Deco building from 1929 that is gone for the most part, and was replaced by a really bland, ugly building. And that's the photo that we took, of course, was the current building.
Sure.
But we also have drawings and photos of the building that was there. And if you're not old enough to remember that building, then this is quite a shock to see what was there and what we wish were still there and what is there now.
There are probably thousands of people every day who drive on College Avenue and don't know why it's called College Avenue.
Well, I tried to find out that answer, and I think it's because there was a school at what is now 13th and College, and there's a historic plaque there, and we show a picture of that original building in the booklet. We do tell the answer in the booklet of what that is called today, and where it is and so forth.
Which we're not giving away to you.
Which we're not giving away, right. And on our social media, we're asking people, don't do spoiler alerts. Don't tell people what it is. But we do give the answer in the booklet. But Northwestern Christian University, Northwestern was two names, was founded there in the 1850s. And the building was designed by the fellow who later that same decade designed Christchurch Cathedral, which, of course, still exists down on the Monument Circle.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as we can tell, that's the origin, because the words university and college are tossed around rather loosely. And so in some things that we read about it, they called it a college and so on. So we're assuming that that's where the name came from.
Sure. And the cool thing about College Avenue is that it incorporates, as do many of our older streets, incorporates retail, restaurants, all kinds of commercial buildings, but mm-hmm. also residences.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how did you, I mean, I picture you and your team just kind of walking up various blocks and just looking and mm-hmm. coming. Did you come up with an initial sort of inventory of buildings that might be candidates to be included?
Well, when I first talked about it, we had some in mind already because mm-hmm. we were familiar with the street. Well, not as familiar as we are now, of course.
Sure.
And so we got in my car and we just started literally driving up and down College.
Mm-hmm.
We went all the way down to downtown
mm-hmm.
and then up as far as Broad Ripple and said, oh, we like that one.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd whip the car over and we'd take a picture of it, sometimes that we actually ended up using later, other times just for information. We also shot a picture of the whole building for ourselves and to use at the end of this project so that we can show people, you know, who didn't find it or who just show up to enjoy the thing to see what it looks like. And we came up with at least 35 buildings. Now, we have 7 in the booklet. We came up with 35 buildings that we had identified, knowing that we were skipping many others, you know, as we went along. One of those we chose, for example, that is not in the booklet, is a building just south of 35th and College, which is the building where Martin Center College was founded, which became Martin University.
Yeah.
And it's there. It's closed at the moment and is in need of restoration and so forth. And we hope it'll be saved and plaqued and all this kind of thing. But I knew that from working with Martin that was the actual building. So we had buildings like that we did not use but might be used in a future project.
Sure.
So there's just, I mean, College alone we could do.
You could do multiple.
Multiple booklets, yes. But we're
also
thinking of other streets and other entities, like a neighborhood. Looking up the old North Side, for example, you know, looking up the Mile Square,
mm-hmm.
Looking up churches. Look, I mean, there's just different kinds of categories you could choose that would take you all over the city and, of course, elsewhere in the state as well.
And I love, you know, the fact that you're also a writer really shows in the pun of the title because it's physically, literally looking up. But we hope that people who participate will then go on to look up, as in find out more about these places.
Exactly, yeah.
So who's your target audience? Who do you want to get these booklets in the hands of?
Well, the fourth graders are the ones who study Indiana history,
mm-hmm.
and that's been the case for many, many years. So we're approaching a lot of schools, not just along college, but although there are a number, but you know, within the area, and everyone is invited, of course. So, up, you know, elementary students, middle school students, high school students, those are key targets. But we also hope that a lot of adults just form a group. Maybe it's a book club or a group from a church or
a photography club.
Exactly, a photography club. Bicyclists. You know, we thought of this when we saw the bike riding at night. And I thought, oh, you know, people who go around on bikes might love to meet and just go and look up, you know, and find these places. Because
mm-hmm.
the booklets will be available, you know, various places in the city, libraries, and we'll be giving them out to a lot of schools and so forth. They're all free. They're also, it's going to be a PDF on the Indiana History, Indiana Historical site. It's indianahistory.org, and they can go there and find it and print it off. So, yes, school kids are the main target, but we want everybody, individuals or groups, to participate.
When you were in the process of taking the photos, did anybody stop you and say, why are you taking a picture of my building?
No, only one time. and I can't say what it is because it's in the book.
Yeah.
And this, we had picked this one building. We had driven by and taken some photos. And it was one of those that would be an example of this had been a lovely building because we have a historic photo of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a mess. It's been all painted over down below and the brick and so forth. Well, when I stopped by later, I saw all these trucks there, and people were working on it, and they're restoring it. So by the time people start on this treasure hunt, as we're calling it, this will be a place that will have a lot of, you know, a restaurant and bar and apartments and condos and all kinds of things, you know, in this building. And it's wonderful that that's taking place. So that in itself is a whole story. And the owner of that did ask me a lot of questions, and I showed him the historic photo that we had from the Historical Society, which he had not seen. And so he took me on a tour inside the building that is currently being restored, and
mm-hmm.
we saw the original early 1900s clawfoot bathtub, and the old fireplaces that looked beautiful, gorgeous marble or granite, whatever they were, and things like this that are being saved. So,
what a stroke of luck! Right time, right place.
Exactly. Yes, and he's quite excited about it. He's going to have booklets available
good.
At his place and so on.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool! Yeah. That's so cool, and also a reminder that history is dynamic, that things
just keep
changing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But why is it important to look at these old places?
Well, historic preservation is, and I know it is with you too, is something that I've been so interested in, so passionate about for so long. And I'd written a pictorial history of Santa Fe when we lived there and of Taos, New Mexico, and became very interested in architectural styles and in saving buildings. And there are in Santa Fe, there's a very aggressive preservation group that really puts you through the paces in order to make any changes, you know, in certain parts of the city. And so, but I'm very appreciative of that. And because of that, a lot of buildings were saved because Santa Fe would have lost so much, for example. And there is a book called Lost America or Lost USA, something like that, that I started to look at it. It's too depressing because it's only photos of buildings that we lost.
Oh, man.
But we could do a book of Indianapolis, certainly, that would be only that. I mean, you have the English building that was on the circle that was torn down for a JCPenney's, you know, and that was just a glorious building. So there are many, many buildings that, you know, along college and everywhere else that were lost, and it's too bad.
What do you hope the outcome of this project is?
I hope to get the kids again, the kids very committed to historic preservation,
mm-hmm.
and to see how things have changed for good or ill, how things have been saved that were bad. Because we show, for example, one building that was in pretty bad shape only about 30 or 40 years ago, and now it's gorgeous. It's been restored. So it's like we go the other direction as well to say, see, this is what can happen. But if this building had been left to in its decline as it was in the 1970s, it would have been torn down by now, or it still would be just in shambles. So we really wanted to show kids and adults what the possibilities are and why it's important and what happens when you do save something, why it's so wonderful. You know, a building has been repurposed and restored and so forth. On the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, you have buildings that are no longer there. You know, you go the other extreme, and it's like, let's not have that happen again. So the next time something like that is threatened, get out there and do something about it. Protest and write letters and talk to people who could make that not happen.
Sharon Gamble with John Sherman. With his friend and colleague, Maowa Tamori, he created a new interactive history game called Looking Up College Avenue. To obtain a booklet for the Looking Up College Avenue treasure hunt, email lucahints@gmail.com. That's lucahints@gmail.com for a location near you. Free booklets will be placed in libraries and businesses and offered to schools. Follow Looking Up College Avenue or Luca on Twitter and Instagram at lucahints and on Facebook at Looking Up College Avenue. Booklets and leader guides are also available for downloading from the Indiana Historical Society website at indianahistory.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m.
I'll take a look at a new novel, The Enchantress of Paris, and I'll hear about WFYI's new small studio concerts, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.